And we're back.
Oh, for another awesome episode.
Welcome, raring to go,
everyone, to Three Truths and a Slide. I'm one of your co-hosts, Aaron Schaefer, and through the magic of very special internet maneuvers, Kristen Froberg. Kristen, how are things?
They're good. I'm excited to see what this episode has in store for us. Season two has done a lot so far, so yeah.
So for those of you that are new to the podcast, welcome and thank you. Each episode, I tell Kristen three truths and a lie about the TV show Sliders that we watch it one episode at a time, and she tries to figure out how hard it is to not cheat and watch an episode ahead of time. So, Chris,
well, I've succeeded at that so far, and you can tell by my success ratio with the guesses. But
so our next episode is season two, episode three, deep yes. into this second season. It's titled Jillian of the Mystic.
And I did see that title ahead of time. And all I wondered is, what on earth? I guess we'll find out.
So spoiler, it's not Jillian Anderson. So sorry about that.
But thank you for letting me know, though. It's important for me to like go in with my expectations appropriately adjusted.
But it did air March 15th, 1996. Mm-hmm. And so, Kristen, are you ready for the next batch of Three Truths and a Slide?
I'm ready. Very ready.
Okay. So, first truth, Jerry is invisible. Second truth, ooh, Jerry scares a horse to untie itself. Third truth, what? Jerry learns how to float. Fourth truth, what? Jerry kisses Wade with two fingers on her lips. So you know that maneuver where like you kiss your lips, then move in to kiss someone else's lips? That maneuver.
Yeah.
Okay, so hold on. I need to gather myself after that.
Wow. That was a bounty that you just presented me with. It's a rich text, only you read it out loud. But I presume you wrote it down, so it is a rich text. Yeah, we're going to have to review.
I do have the receipts. Okay. All right. So my eyes are tearing up. I don't know why this list is really cracking me up, but it really is.
Because I have tears in my eyes right now.
Oh, man.
It's the fact that knowing even before we review it that three of these things are going to happen in the next episode. I'm not ready, but let's move forward, boldly forward.
Okay. Oh, no. I can't contain. I don't know why this is so funny to me. All right. So, first truth.
It's different.
First truth. I can't do this. First truth. Jerry is invisible.
Aaron, I can't wait. Okay. Second, number one, Jerry's invisible.
Second truth. Jerry scares a horse to untie itself.
Powerful. Okay.
Third truth.
Invisible horse.
No. He scares a horse to untie itself.
Oh yes. Yeah, no. I'm doing little mnemonic devices. Oh, with myself, got it.
Oh yes, of course.
One invisible, two horse. Three.
All right, three. Jerry learns how to float.
It's the idea that he didn't know before, which I've got to say is plausible. Okay. One, invisible. Two, horse. Three, float.
I don't know why this is getting me in the right way. All right, fourth, Jerry kisses Wade with two fingers on her lips.
An iconic junior high maneuver that, okay, I'm just going to say I'm sure this happens in the episode. I am sure that that happens in the episode. I really hope I'm not disappointed. So let me narrow it down from, okay, invisible or the horse or the float. Let me be guided by the force in this moment. I'm doing the Yoda sort of maneuver. Just at my cat. She hates it. Okay, I think that the float thing happens. So is Jerry invisible or does the thing with the horse happen?
Yeah, does he scare a horse to untie itself?
Okay, I think he does. And again, I'm allowing myself to be guided by what three things do I want to see most in the episode.
That's a good approach.
And our listenership of between 2 and 2 million, I know that they care a lot why I'm wrong if I am wrong. Concepts like invisibility, shapeshifting, all that hasn't really been introduced into the world yet. I mean, it very well could in this episode, watch him be invisible in the opening credits. No, I'm going with number one is the slide. Yeah.
All right. Number one's the slide. The lie is Jerry is invisible.
Why do I think I'm going to be weeping throughout this entire episode?
If the intro is any indication.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, man. All right. So before I lose my composure again, let's summon the vortex and find out what happens.
And we're back out of the vortex.
We're back, but the horse is gone. All right, Kristen, let's get right into this. Is Jerry invisible?
He is. It's impactful.
Does Jerry make a horse untie itself?
Yes. I can't wait to talk about it.
Does Jerry learn how to float?
No,
that's the lie. And
so sad.
But and also feels like a big miss when he's floating around invisible and he can like see through objects. He should be able to float or like go between floors and stuff.
Walk through walls. What is it that's making him walk on the ground? Like, how is it? Anyway, these are the issues, but sadly we can't address every issue.
And does Jerry give Rembrandt a chill on the cheek?
Oh, yeah.
Like he's walking over his grave. All right. So in this episode, there are three worlds. Mm-hmm. There's a rainstorm world. There's a world at the very end that we will not talk about until the very end. And then there is the main world, which I have been referring to as Luddite world. So
that's about right, yeah.
Technology has been banned and made illegal. And turns out there's an evil group that's been hoarding quote-unquote advanced technology so that they can take over the world. But the most important aspect of this whole episode is that Jerry exists on the astral plane. So he's invisible, but someone can see him, which leads to hijinks and deep life lessons learned. So
yeah, actually, at the time we're recording this, I'm very excited to go see Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. But like Doctor Strange has a lot to do with astral plane. And so there again, I'm going to act like the comics aren't like even older than Sliders. And I'm just going to go ahead and act like this faction of the MCU, too, also simply would not exist without the show Sliders. Sliders walked so these other things could run. No one is doing it like them, unparalleled.
The shoulders of giants.
Yeah.
So in the first world, it's Storm World. There's a lot of rain. There's a lot of lightning flashing from strobe lights that don't match with the thunder sounds that you're also hearing.
We're really only just seeing them emerge from Storm World.
But the biggest hole in my heart in this first part is this jamming music intro just makes me miss Mark Mothersbaugh, because that he would have brought more heat in this scene. You know this. You feel like the earth and the rain in your teeth when you hear Mark Mothersbaugh. And I didn't feel the rain in my teeth in this. So
I feel the rain in my teeth, famously a deleted verse to the Natasha Bedingfield, feel the rain on your, those were actually the original lyrics. So just keep that in mind next time you hear that song. Next time you watch The Hills opening, which people do all the time, think about that.
That might be our next pod. Who knows?
Yeah. Oh, a Hills recap pod? No. I bet if we did that, it would be like any other Hills recap pod.
Three hills and a slide.
Oh, yeah.
So, what's so strange about, like, why do our heroes keep forgetting how to slide? Why do they do this? Like, they take a vacation.
A brain wipe thing that happens every time they slide and they forget how to, it's just, it looks like a meme every single time. And I love that.
So they take forever to go in, and then Jerry's the very last one. And Kristen, what happens right as he's entering the vortex?
Well, there's the lightning, right?
There is.
Boom, crash.
And everyone who was in the vortex felt the jolt at the same time.
Yeah, someone felt like they'd been kicked, I believe.
So they end up on a beach in San Francisco, and they're like, where's Jerry? Jerry?
Where's Jerry? Where is he?
And he's like, guys, I'm over here. Guys. And then there's a scene that you see coming because you're like, that looks like a green screen. And sure enough, Wade walks right through him. Such rad green screen. I love it.
But I was waiting with bated breath, and I felt the energy. Kind of like the way Wade didn't feel the energy. Because wait, did I miss that? Because I did watch it twice. I may have been distracted by a freezer mishap one of the times, but like, it's very noteworthy when Rembrandt has the moment, but Wade was just kind of, it was because she was in a state of chaos to begin with. Where is he?
And so the way Jerry was trying to interact with everyone and was watching them, this is the only time he's brought Jerry watching Jerry energy when he wasn't looking at himself.
Oh, incredible point. Yeah.
And so then we go to the town, which is like old timey with gas stations, and there's a horse tied to a pole. Watch that horse. Keep your eye on that horse.
Watch this space. Yes.
And then
this space equals the horse.
And then Jerry's running around on the neighbor on the sidewalk trying to be an attention hog. And the best was when did you write down any of his dialogue while trying to talk to strangers?
Oh gosh. Did I? It was just general, like that thing of when maybe someone doesn't speak a language and you're convinced that yelling English loudly will somehow get it through. Like just waving his hands like, "Can anyone see or hear me?" Like just really committed to it, going for it.
The best line I wrote down was there was a mailman walking. He's like, "Hey, Mr. Postman, hello. Hello, Mr. Postman."
Oh, that, yes. I was like, are they trying to make me think of the song on purpose? Because I sure did, but.
Yeah, so they were really like, they were setting a tone early for like a strong Back to the Future energy with this, with even Jerry's dialogue, not let alone the scene, the cafe, everything is very back to the Michael J. Fox. This is his demo reel for Back to the Future 3.
Oh, for sure. And then when there is a postman at the end, you know, cinematic parallels.
Yeah. Yeah.
Is it the same postman? I should go back and look.
did Sliders get picked up by Cinemax?
I think so.
So the heroes talk to a police officer, and it turns out it's a crime to have a Casio Timex watch. And then Jerry, to save our heroes, brings I wrote down in my notes, big horse energy. Kristen, what were your thoughts as Jerry began interacting with this horse?
Anytime a horse gets frightened, spooked is often the word used. Anytime a horse is frightened by a supernatural happening, I'm happy. I'm sure that no horses were harmed in the making of this episode. Just like, it's like in movies, it's like, no, one of the tropes is like, no one believes the person or no one believes the child. Listen, if a horse anywhere on our earth is acting frightened, you need to leave. You need to vacate. Like, do not mess around when the horse is frightened. Aaron, the horse is always right. Always. So
you know who else is right? Is Jerry. Because our heroes don't run until Jerry Sense shouts, "Run, guys," and then they say, "Oh, we should go," and then they run away.
And it's like they can't hear him, but they do feel it, they sense it. But the shot but the shot of the horse, the rope coming untied, is cinematic. I would say cinema. It was it's up there with the wine glass. It is very, very good.
And then they go to the hotel, and we have.
Sorry, I wrote, the panicking horse is my MVP, and also the shot of the rope. Then that was my that concludes my coverage of that epic scene. When did they decide that this was the hotel in every universe that they did? I must have missed that.
I think this hotel actually changes to another hotel later on. Either that or they changed the inside of it, because there's a different hotel that's introduced in other seasons.
But we'll get there. But so we figure out that they have a hotel on every world that they just go to, and that, because I was like, how would Jerry know how to go to this hotel? But there's like, maybe they picked, decided like whatever is in this geographical spot.
Yeah.
In San Francisco, we go to that, and we just try to meet at whatever's there in case we get separated. So they go to see if he's there. He is and is not. They can't see him.
But who is there is Will Sasso. We have another sassy Sasso alert.
Great to see him as always.
And so they ask him about a computer store, and he's like, whoa, the Bureau of Anti-Technology would have my innkeeper's license. Delivered in such a way only he can do it.
he would have been MVP if not for the horse, but something about his delivery of my innkeeper's license in particular, just absolutely great stuff. Can't wait to talk about the professor here in a minute.
Oh yeah, so when they go to the room, I love Jerry's sense, like saying over his shoulder, we got to figure something out, guys.
I know. The episode chock full of helpful such interjections from him.
Those are all the notes that I took on this room scene. Was there something the professor said in here that you wanted to?
Where's the part where he's like, it's incredible that none of this stuff is in the phone book. It must not exist anyway. Let's go to a computer store. I was like, wait, what? And I had to run it back. I was like, I think he's serious. I loved it.
Oh yeah. That was Will Sasso.
Yeah.
That was in front of Sasso.
So it was during the computer.
Yeah.
I could get my innkeeper's license revoked. Yeah. Not only are computers not on the internet in this world, they don't even have computers, professor. I'm so sorry. No.
And then, so they go to the church, and they go to the church because Rembrandt says there's two people that we can trust with a secret. There's a lawyer and a priest doesn't charge anything. Great line.
Yep.
And then they go to the church, and Kristen, I was hoping that you could unpack this plot point, because I am not sure how to feel about this. So would you say she's in high school? Like, what is the age of this youth?
Okay, unclear. Maybe early, I would say early college, but okay. Lives with her parents. Maybe late high school. Yeah, definitely seemed very young, but also, I mean, so did the girls that we'll get to that I wish zero good things for, but the way that that woman was interacting with them, they did all seem very young.
Yeah.
I'm jumping ahead a bit, yeah, but so, a little, I just kind of, I tend to notice whenever there's a little spiritual moment, Wade just kind of says she's going to go pray for Jerry, which is nice. It's a nice thing to do. Mm. And she's mentioned, curious, Wade knows about all kinds of things, but then the way that Rembrandt's like, I didn't have the heart to tell her. And I'm like, guys, I think she could have figured out that it's a little bit dire with Jerry. I think that she knows. She's just doing she's doing something to do something, but yeah, they're in the church. Rembrandt has the idea of talking to a priest. I forget what the professor's doing. We meet this.
The professor. Oh, wait. Oh, no. Sorry. I'm crossing my wires with another.
Like sliders. We're jumping all over. That's okay.
Yeah. Sorry. I almost slid into another episode. I don't know what the professor's doing right now. Probably being grumpy about something. So this gal, Jillian, is in the pew and she sees Jerry. For some reason, she realizes she's the only one that can see him. I don't know why, but she does have the Jerry sense. So I trust the process that she figures it out. And so apparently she has a history of seeing people that others can't see, like the Sixth Sense, which, by the way, again, if you thought that movie was original, you should have just watched Sliders to begin with.
True story. I didn't see it when it originally came out, like in the fall, but then we still had a functioning dollar movie theater in our town at that time. I went unspoiled, Aaron, for months. And then the night before I was set to see it at the dollar theater, which is my fault because I shouldn't have waited so long, I read a little joke in Entertainment Weekly magazine, spoilers for 1999's The Sixth Sense coming, that said, oh yeah, he really pulled a Bruce Willis in Sixth Sense. And in that moment, I was like, oh, but it was, and I think that was one of the last movies you could kind of hold off for a while and maybe not get the big twist spoiled for you. But I'm still mad decades later that it was, the plot twist was spoiled for me the night before I went to go see it. I mean, was I quick enough to have figured it out anyway? Let's be real, probably not. Still a very enjoyable film with the acting and stuff. Highly recommend it. But the way that her struggle is handled is kind of interesting. And I know that we sometimes talk about things that haven't aged well. Nothing in this episode was like that. I was just like, y'all are not being empathetic to this woman's very understandable from both sides struggle. From her side, it's like she can't help what's going on. But from everyone else's perspective, literally, why would they take it at face value that she can just see people? Like, Jerry gets a little bit, Jerry makes some baby steps, but gotta say, our guy Jer, not empathetic to her struggles at the beginning.
No. In fact, he creates problems for her and she keeps thanking him afterwards for getting them out of the problems that he creates. And I'm like, this does not feel like a healthy dynamic. What is happening?
It was just goofy. It was the only thing that gave me pause. I was like, no, he's being such a jerk. How can you? But I mean, they had to move the plot forward. But it did jump out to me that he was asking her things like, what are you so afraid of? Like, she's afraid of getting put in a mental institution. Like, I'm pretty sure she said that, bro. So she's always, oh, this did unlock a question. Who are these other people that she can see? Are there other sliders? What are they on the, who are the people?
I'm glad you brought that up. So this could have been like a part of like, the sliders mythos of astral plane. I don't think that this is addressed at all for the rest of the show. And if it is, it might be one other episode, but it's not like, the black oil of X-Files. Like they don't come back to this.
In the way that Agent Krychek doesn't come back, this also does not come back.
Right. Again, another huge miss, because the astral plane interacting with what our heroes, that could have been good stuff.
It just did make me wonder. I was like, who are the other people she sees? Are they fellow travelers or are they dead people? What's going on? But
yeah.
Or is it that she has genuinely sees things that aren't there and then here's Jerry? Either way, she ends up being very useful to Jerry, who immediately picks up on, so you can see me, and starts like yelling at her. And I feel like he's kind of yelling at her not to go as she's like actively being dragged away by her mom. Like, bro.
Her mom brings like really like permiscal mom energy, because in each scene her mom is her mom's vibe is, why are you talking to these three grown adults? What is happening here?
Yeah, stranger danger.
Yes,
for this young adult.
Yeah,
I think she's young adult. Yeah, yes, slider danger. I think that she's about like college age, but I forget what her name is.
Jillian.
Jillian. Oh yeah. Oh right. The episode title.
I like that. Might be the first time that an episode is named after someone. So shout out to Jillian.
How did I not know that? That's, I don't know. I was just thinking of her as that blonde girl that helps them, even though he's kind of off the rails. But take us through what happens next.
So they the priest sends them to. Oh, by the way, the priest's name, Father Jerry. And sends them to Jerry's dad. Easter eggs.
Yep.
So they go to Jerry's dad's house and they go into the basement, which, what's up with the lightning bolts that are all around everywhere? Is that a callback to the very beginning of the episode? Like, I was like, is this a thing?
Let's go with yeah, maybe.
And then, like, so later in the episode, there's the lightning bolts they show on the wall. It's clearly the outline of a man that made out of lightning bolts. And it reminds me of the Matrix with the, like, the green scroll on the screen. There are some times where you can see, like, a person in the vacancy between the characters as well. And so I'm like, oh, Matrix, stealing from Jerry's dad's basement. Well done.
Stealing from, inspired by. Okay, I joke a lot about, oh, Martin Scorsese watches this show, so-and-so watches the show. I would not be surprised at all if the Wachowskis had watched this show. I kind of want to look into it.
Yeah, I totally believe that as well. So then the professor try. Oh, so by the way, again, this is, I don't know if this is like, these are lines that would be on television now, but I really don't think they were that edgy back then. But because the Jerry in this world died of polio,
and the polio, Aaron,
the polio, and the professor goes on a rant with lines like, because of an irrational fear of science, a preventable disease is around to run rampant. This country is so fearful of the unknown. I was like, man, this is like prophetic stuff. Well done, Sliders.
The way that I didn't take notes on it, but I did send some of the text verbatim to a friend, and I was like, whoa, this episode of Slider is getting into it. But the lines are the kind of lines that, like, okay, there is the show Grey's Anatomy, then there was the spinoff Private Practice, and the anti-vax episode of Private Practice, where, okay, I'm going to spoiler an episode of Private Practice. This woman refused to get her kids, like, I don't know, a measles vaccine or one, and then one dramatically dies and codes, like, in the room. And then this person who works at the private practice, like, storms out to the lobby with the syringe and just injects the other child. And, okay, would it be funny if that happened in life? No. Is it funny in Private Practice with whatever pseudo Coldplay is playing? Yes, it's deeply hilarious. But so that's an example. Like, that show was always doing heavy-handed, wow, I bet this is going to reach the people who have angrily turned it off by now. But just, like, very heavy-handed. But the fact is, I don't think they were necessarily trying to make a point about a single thing when this episode was on the air. But if you had this exact dialogue, like, now, people would be like, oh, I wish we could just watch a single thing without getting political. But it was just... Well, and same with Rembrandt's healthcare joke. It's like, I have no idea if some of these things are to get a little zing in or if people were just vibing. But yeah, there's a whole thing about vaccines. But I'm so sorry. His delivery of the polio really cracks me up. I like Mr. Jerry's dad. I'd like to see more of Jerry's dad.
And then, so the professor tries fixing the timer, zaps himself, can't figure it out. So Jerry leaves because
he's helpfully yelling what the professor should be doing the whole time. Can the professor hear this? Absolutely not. But, like, I'm one to talk. I yell at devices.
Yeah, we were getting the play-by-play from Jerry.
Yeah.
And so we go to the Back to the Future Cafe where Jillian gets bullied by some mean girls.
Awful.
And then
she's so mean. She tips her and she's like, keep it. You'll need it for therapy. Because as we know, Aaron, there's no bigger sick burn. There's no sicker burn than implying that someone would go to therapy. I mean, that's like just regular. That's a lot of shows humor. But this girl's so mean. I want bad things to happen to her.
So then there's thievery. $100 is taken from the till. And how does Poirot Jerry get to the bottom of this?
How does he solve the problem that he created? Well, let me tell you. So she's working at the cafe. This girl is being mean to her from the jump. Jerry presumably can perceive this. It might be here when he asks what she's so afraid of. And it's like, so did you just hear that young woman making fun of her because she think because of the hearing voices and seeing people? Or he doesn't have time. So he, like, pulls her into the hallway. and we see shots of her in the hallway. The episode does a lot of shots that are just her talking to the air, so we do see what other people see. And I'm in no way suggesting that it's cool or good for them to be mad or to be awful to her about it, as they are. However, it does absolutely look to them like she's talking to no one. So this awful girl takes advantage of her being like distracted and steals $100 from the register. And then what an iconic commentary on how wages work in that time and probably now, when the manager lady comes back and is like, Jillian, there's $100 missing from the register. It's coming out of your paycheck. And the math she gives for how long it would take her to earn that back is very like, ooh, girl. Jerry sees the girlies snickering, the budget plastics, goes over there. We get a great shot, cinema, of him not sticking his head in the purse, but like passing his cranium through the purse. He sees the money that's in there and then tells her it's in there. And then she opens the girl's purse, and then the woman and the mean girl is like, oh, that's actually my mom's money. And then the woman who runs the cafe is like, oh, she says, you can ask my mom. And the woman's like, oh, I will. Come to my office. So this is what makes me think everybody's young enough to still be made to come to some adult's office.
That's why I was thinking high school. Because if they were in college, I don't know if that would be a thing.
High school, well, there's a subordination that's still present in your mind when you're like a freshman or so. Or maybe if you like live at home. I don't know. You, maybe some people are bold from the jump. I certainly was not. But so that's kind of the end of that plot line with this girl. But this Jillian is, some might say, disproportionately grateful to Jerry for getting her out of the mess that he absolutely caused. Yeah. So
she's like, trust is forged.
Yeah, she's on board. She's going to help. I mean, it is the very least he can do, and he did it. So
she's like, well, clearly the next thing I need to do is put myself in peril.
Yeah.
I'm going to drive you places, and then I'm going to be forced to leave a taxi to wait for a ghost to come back to protect me when he can't even protect me in the first place.
More very good work from a taxi driver on the show.
Yes. And so it turns out that... So the anti-technology bureau with real DMV energy comes in and arrests only Jerry's dad and takes the timer. And at this moment, so there is a certain plot point in Sliders episodes where my heart is outside of my chest. And that is when the timer is separated from our heroes.
Very stressful.
Because it's like, if none of our heroes can get away, potentially. At least some can if someone has the timer on them. So, and it's not like the same heart of the chest when the timer is broke. It's just when it's physically removed and they don't know where it is. It could be anywhere on this world.
Anywhere. Oh, yeah.
And so... So the DMV takes it away, and it turns out that Jerry has her drive him to where it is, and he discovers that his dad is an evil narc, and
yep,
they get a lot of great exposition dump between Jerry's dad chuckling with the other guys about they make me crackpots, but they're eager to spill their guts. And then,
yeah, I mean, they did get him out of prison, so I can see him being grateful. But the exposition dialogue is a delight, a thing of beauty and a joy forever.
And then, so this show really just bounces around to a bunch of different locations. So
yeah,
we're back at the hotel. There's a knock on the door. Kristen, is it a Grim Reaper there to serve papers?
I had hopes, but no, it is not.
No, it is Jillian and Slade and... just Jillian and Jerry, excuse me. And then Jerry gives Rembrandt a chill on the cheek, and they get more exposition dump with Jerry continuously interrupting her.
Oh, well, so this is where... Is this where she... We're jumping all over. Sorry, listeners. My cat is trying to eat the little platform where I've got my things. When did she give them the note that Jerry dictated to her?
Oh, that was in the church.
Yeah. Wait, I'm so sorry. Did we talk about it and I just mentally skipped over?
I might have glossed all the way over it.
Yeah. Oh, here. No. I'm so sorry. We've got to slide back in time and talk about how earlier what had happened was Jerry was like, oh, yeah, because this is why it's deeply annoying that he bugs her in the cafe. He had already told her what he did, what she did for him was the end of it. So in the church, he's like, you can see me here. Please write this note and give it to my friends. It's at this time that he sees fit. Well, and they like kind of are skeptical when she does this and she's like trying to leave. And he's like, hey, you know what? Talk about the time that Wade and I were awkwardly kissing.
Oh,
that's
yes.
Something.
I did. Yeah. Oh, I regret skipping over that. Oh, shoot.
Well, it's, I mean, I would suggest the listeners just go check it out. But so the delivery of it is incredibly annoying and or not annoying, awkward. I wasn't annoyed. It's funny because it just didn't need to, like, of all the things to bring up, it was so clear that this is just being brought up to, like, advance the Wade-Jerry agenda, which, I don't know. I would need to see someone towel drying someone else's hair again to truly believe in it. We shall see. But so, and it's after that that her mom's like, come on. Oh, yeah, and because she has to drop her off at work.
Yeah.
Yeah, she must be a she's young.
So her mom interrupts this youth talking to adults about how two of the adults were making out in a basement.
Well, and they use the phrase necking, and I'm like, I think you all tepidly kissed like a little bit, and then the professor came in. But of course, Rembrandt makes a big deal out of this, which is, I don't know, you've seen them goofing around. And then Wade is a bit starry-eyed over it. So that's what had happened before. And then that's why when Jerry appeared at the cafe to say, what are you so afraid of or whatever, she's like, oh, come on. But so after he then solves the problem that he created, she's like, you know what? I'm in. Put me in, coach. And that brings us back to where we were about 5 minutes ago before we... before I had to take us back. Well, and that isn't that a line from Lost? We have to go back, Kate.
And the professor never heard a plot point that he didn't want to be salty about. So
absolutely not.
So they decide to do a heist. And during the heist, so they rigged the fire alarm, which felt like very MacGyver-y, where it's all of this energy that doesn't really do anything. Because they could have just turned on the fire alarm. That it would have been the exact same thing. And there's a That's So Professor moment where they're trying to figure out how to get into a door. And he's like, the sensitive, a well-made lock with the sensitive tumblers awaiting the simple caress of a precision key. And then, Kristen, what happens? What punctuates the end of that exposition?
Oh, gosh. Was it?
He just smashes the glass. Just smash.
Oh, yeah. I was like, did Jerry have a quip then? No, it was smashing.
And then they got the goods and they got out. I really thought there would be more to this heist. Like, this heist was, like, really anticlimactic.
Yeah, but it was one of the few... It was yet another example of, wow, this happened pretty early on in the episode. I wonder where we're going.
And I'm pretty sure this episode came out after the movie Ghost, but we're going to pretend like the movie Ghost came after this because
I absolutely thought of the movie Ghost. No, I think in this instance, because Ghost had already come out, I was like, ooh, how Ghost are they going to get with it? And the answer is, spoiler, not very. But
and so they have their Ghost date where she tells Jerry, you're my first real friend, which I feel
there's
sorry.
There's some weird music playing in this scene, Aaron. Did you notice that?
No, I know what is the music?
The music tells me there's something going on between them when I really don't think that there is.
Oh, it's like heavy saxophone, right?
Yeah, it's a bit nostalgic sounding, very sentimental. But she's telling him that she never like had a friend before, which is deeply sad. And then he tells her that she has a special gift and basically to invent whatever snake oil around it she would like to do. It's interesting, Aaron. And then he says that like whoever, whatever gave her the gift wouldn't want her to waste it. And it's like, right, okay, gifts are great, but consider people are trying to commit this woman to a mental institution. And since this is 50s world in a lot of ways, not great, Bob. Just caused my cat to launch from the studio.
You have a real gift for snake oil.
That's basically what he says. He tells her to call it ESP or whatever. We talked off mic about how I didn't have a conventional sliding made a difference because y'all, sometimes it speaks to me, sometimes it doesn't. He actually invented, he told her to become Dr. Phil, and that's what he did. Sliding made a difference. This world has a Dr. Phil now. I mean, not quite, because no, she really did see Jerry and mysterious others that are unaddressed, unindicted co-conspirators, but their whole interaction is just like, I don't know where this young woman goes from here.
I think that's the title of the episode. You have a real gift for snake oil.
Yes. He told her to just do whatever she wanted with it, which, I mean, this is actually fair advice. It's her thing to live with, so she should do her best. But the way he said it, call it ESP or whatever. loved it. No notes.
And then, so our heroes coalesce at the hotel. And they convince this youth to join the forces and fight evil. And then they convince the youth's mother to also let the daughter join in the band of heroes. And mm-hmm. then did you write down any of the dialogue of the radio they overhear in the basement?
Oh, I didn't. But okay. it was funny.
For those of you that don't know, Kristen and I, we slide around the greater Portland area in Oregon.
Yep.
So this is the gist of the radio that's dialogue that's being played. Our next contestant is Miss Oregon, studying veterinary medicine at Beaver College.
Right.
Folks, I wish you could see her. Curvaceous swimsuit. Here are her specific measurements. Oh, to be a sick puppy in the hands of such a beauty. I was like, whoa.
I think I blacked out. First of all, I was thinking of a beauty pageant on the radio and wondering, wait, did that used to be a thing? Probably. And then the dialogue, whoever wrote it really went for it. Whoever delivered it really went for it. I'd love to believe it's the same person.
And what really makes it for me is she's studying veterinary medicine at Beaver College. I'm like, that
Beaver College
is amazing. Because like, for those of you that don't know, our state animal is the beaver.
Yeah.
Oh, I was like, this is incredible. Like, whoever did this knows a bit about Oregon. Like, I wonder, I always have hometown pride. So is there a key writer or someone on Sliders who's from the 503? I sure hope so.
I hope so.
So in this lightning basement, there's the lightning bolts, the mom contributes with a brooch pin, and there's piano background music to help the...
And they really set it up, too. If only we had something roughly the size of a pin, and she's in. She decides to go for it. Well, because the professor gave her a speech about, basically, he basically did a Jesse Pinkman, science fist bump at her, and she was like, I'm in.
I really hoped that Jerry was going to deliver the line, our hopes really pin on this.
Oh, missed opportunity.
And then, the dad descends from the stairs with a gun. Oh, by the way,
the gun.
To get into the basement, the professor smashes even more glass. Like, the professor is just really going on a tear this episode.
Oh, yeah. Well, and they're very heightened at this time because, sorry, it's all over the place. But Jillian said, you know, BT dubs, those other people are they did lies. They're going to kill you. So this is dire.
And so they assemble the timer just in time. And after the professor pulls the trigger, there are more gun threats. And Kristen, how did you feel about how... the gun threats are put at bay. Where we all be
no one.
Our eyes
I felt
on Jerry.
That no one is doing it like Sliders. No one could be doing it like Sliders. Is it at this point that he became illuminated by the thing? Or
yeah. So Jerry walks in front of the vortex, and then the professor has to say out loud why we're all able to see him.
Yeah. Yeah, no, the ex. This is some of my favorite exposition of the series so far. It's goofy, it's clunky, it's delivered wonderfully. No, I'm saying this is an absolute compliment. It's everything that I want. He had to get it out there. Very little about the episode. Like, I appreciated the lightning did it. Just don't think about it. I loved it. But so, oh yeah, the dad. So Jerry's illuminated by something. Something they do. They give it a name. And the dad can see him. He can see this beautiful Jerry that did not die of the polio. Tiny Tim who did not die. Well, and presumably if other Jerry died of the polio, he was not the strapping figure that Jerry Prime is, you know.
Oh, like, so yeah. Like it, yeah. It literally is Jerry Prime in all true senses of the word.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Hair immaculate, fit looking great. And the energy, like, it's very consistent throughout the episode. His energy when he is yelling at people and when he sees his father. It's like he's looking at himself, and he kind of is because it's his father, but it's just absolutely great stuff. But yeah, through the power of illuminated Jerry and exposition, they get him to not shoot.
Through the power of illuminated Jerry and
exposition. Because illuminated Jerry is powerful. Illuminated Jerry made a difference. Not sliding, illuminated Jerry. And then... Aaron, when it's time for them to go through the portal, would you say they do that like briskly in a timely manner that makes sense to you?
That, like, it felt like half the episode it took them to get through this portal.
They're always taking so long to get in the portal. And then I want to time it. I got to think it must align. But they always say the portal will be open for this long. And then it's open for what feels like about 3 to 5 times as long. But...
And so then they have all their goodbyes. Rembrandt reaches for illuminated Jerry. Professor yeah. promises to come back. And then Jerry and Slade have a
moment. It's the hardest thing he's ever done. The professor says it's the hardest thing he's ever done. Which, dubious, but okay. And yeah, then Wade and Jerry do have a moment because the tepid kissing was brought up several times this episode. And the way she had earlier delivered the line, "Aw, Jerry, why do you have to kiss and tell?" It just, what a fun moment for Sabrina Lloyd. But so I will say, I love the cast. I love the work they do. Energy was not put into making this seem like this was the actual goodbye to me.
Yeah. More energy was put into the time where she was offered a queenship. And
yeah.
said no, and then left with a big old kiss. Way more yeah. energy was put into that than this.
Well, and it's because I'm a gullible nerd, but remember the time I thought Cleveland Derricks was really leaving the show? Because when I say I'm unspoiled, I do try my best. When they said goodbye to Rembrandt in that episode, I was like... I was getting pretty convinced that it could be, especially since I thought it was the last episode of the season. None of that energy was present here, but I was very curious and excited to see just how they would fix it with Jerry. Because he can't go in the portal.
Yeah, so Jerry kisses Wade on the lips with his finger, and...
It's great.
I don't know what else to say about that.
No, he does it. I mean, we don't have a ghost moment, but that's for the best.
And then the vortex closes and Jerry is left alone with his thoughts.
Yep.
And then, Kristen, when your screen started turning red, what was happening?
And then everyone came through the endgame portals and Chris Evans said, "Avengers assembled." No. I was like, wow, are we going to get an explanation as to why the portal has opened on the astral plane? Because I hope not. I hope we just rock with it. And I feel that I got my wish.
Yeah. It was just simply like, oh, the vortex is now opening on the astral plane. Like, why didn't it open on both to begin with? I don't understand. Like, why did it have to wait like 10 seconds after the other one closed? Nevertheless.
I mean, no, the impact. We have to have every couple episodes, we got to act like we think that there's a final parting. But, you know, this traumatized young woman has bonded with him now. The mom's kind of bonded with him. She can't see him, of course, but that's fine. But there's a portal for Jerry.
Just for
Jerry.
You
love to see it.
Just
for
Jerry.
He has his own. He's special. No, he is special. I love it. This was a very fun episode.
And then the episode ends where our heroes dust themselves off and they see a shaking bush. And what is in this bush? Is this biblical? It's just
Oh, wow. No, but when you said, is this biblical? The metaphors, the potential. We just simply never know.
And so there are two very fun facts about this new world they're in. The first one involves our mailman teaser from earlier. And Kristen, what's notable about this mailman?
What's notable is the thing that is the most funnier than anything else has ever been. Nudity. Nudity is hilarious. No, just I remember when that old woman who was the MVP of her episode, who was like calling the communists and like waving a rat trap around, was like, a rock drummer and a nudist. So someone on the writing team is like, you know what's funny? Nudity, which, hey, I'm not going to say it is not often very funny, but there's a great like Power Rangers-esque line delivery of, pretty sure the postman wears clothes in our world or something like that.
Then there's the second detail of this world. I don't know if you noticed this. There are snowbanks in San Francisco.
No, I didn't. I was focused on the other thing.
Yeah, so they had... So whoever... this poor actor, whoever signed up for this, when he showed up to... By the way, is there snow ever in San Francisco? Is this a thing that I'm not aware of?
I'm gonna live fact check. Let's see.
Because...
I mean, I wonder if it happens so rarely that the entire city freaks out like they certainly do in Portland when there's snow.
Because I was like, wait, like, is there snow? Because if there was snow, then this poor actor that shows up is like, wait, I have to do what? Or
I feel like no, but let's see.
If there's not snow, then they weirdly added dirty snowbanks along the street. And I'm like, I don't know how I feel about either.
The last time measurable snow fell in San Francisco was February 7th, 1976, when snow covered the Golden Gate Bridge and Marin Headlands, with snowflakes also coming down to sea level.
What? So... they either did not film in San Francisco or they added snow. I don't like this is the one question of Sliders that is melting my mind more than anything. I don't know which way is up now.
No. Another fun fact. Has it ever snowed on Christmas in San Francisco? San Francisco got 2.5 inches of snow on Christmas Day, 1856. It has snowed a handful of times since then in the Bay Area, but never again on Christmas Day. So the short answer is that is truly nothing to do with anything, but no snow in San Francisco. They're just rolling with it. They're just going for it. And we love that. We love to see it.
Oh man. That's amazing. The
good
snow,
solid episode, I thought.
They slid into a snow nudist world. I love
it. After encouraging Jillian to become Dr. Phil. Sliding made a difference. Because they invented that brand of...
They invented Dr. Oz.
Oh, yeah. Maybe that's actually who I meant. Because Dr. Phil is... sorry. These are people that I vaguely am aware... Sometimes if someone like that is enough of a meme, I'm like, there's might be something shady that they've done. I don't know the specifics of these people. I don't even know what Dr. Oz does, but I know that there's been some shady business. Yes, Jerry made her become Dr. Oz.
I love it. So that's it for my notes. Anything else on the episode?
Nope. Just enjoyed it.
Well, thank you, dear listeners, for listening to our pod. We're on Instagram. We do have a presence on Twitter and Facebook as well. Please review and rate our pod on whatever podcast platform you're listening on.
Summon the vortex for me to be more motivated to slide into our own social media and engage with the 3,000 to 3,000 of you. Somewhere in there. Can't narrow it down further.
But I think so. That does it for season 2, episode 3, Jillian of the Spirits.
Jillian of the Spirits, which I watched it twice and still didn't know that young woman's name, even though it is the title. But I contain multitudes, like sliders. Sliders actually made me contain multitudes. So excited to explore that space moving forward.
Dr. Oz of the Spirits.
All right. Yep.
Cool. All right. Well, thank you all for listening and looking forward. Kristen, when can we look forward to seeing people?
On the flip slide, Aaron.